They too felt somewhat odd to the touch. Not silk like she was used to, but something coarser, almost like burlap in some parts.
What sort of robes are these, Yuli?
You'll see,
Yuli said with another grin.
Try one on. It will amaze you.
Warily, Fia undressed to her undergarments again while Yuli continued to grin at her almost mischievously.
Yuli, what are these robes? Seriously?
Will you just get them on?
Fia rolled her eyes.
Fine.
She pulled on the new robes, which felt altogether too heavy and uncomfortable at the same time. She pulled the sash about her waist and felt the robes tighten around her enormous belly.
Well, they fit, I suppose,
Fia said.
But what's so special about them?
Yuli smiled and nodded towards the mirror.
Have a look.
Fia did so cautiously, and when she saw herself, she nearly let out a scream. Gone was the tummy altogether, the robe seeming to look as tight-fitting as a swimming garment. She didn't understand what she was seeing, but something else was off. Her bust and belly seemed to have swapped places.
Yuli! What have these robes done to me?
They've done nothing to you,
Yuli said, looking at her from behind through the mirror.
They've simply changed your proportions to trick the eye and take the focus off your stomach.
And put them on my breasts? I look like a harlot!
Don't be so dramatic,
Yuli said.
What are these robes, Yuli?
They're mummer's robes,
Yuli said.
I had Jian Yi special order them for me from the next province. No one will know.
Mummer's robes?
Yes, mummers use them all the time to play different characters. Even a man can dress in this robe and appear as a woman.
Fia stepped back to admire herself in the mirror again with new eyes.
Mummer's robes? How do they work? There are wards lined within the fabric that can trick the eye and change the proportions of one's body. You can still feel your tummy, but others will only notice your bust.
Fia wasn't certain she liked the trade-off, but what choice did she have?
For the record,
Yuli said,
I think you look fabulous. Max will probably love it.
Fia rolled her eyes again.
I'm sure he will.
There was another knock at the door. Both women paused.
Are you expecting someone else?
Yuli asked.
Certainly not at my bedroom.
Another wave of panic took hold. She wasn't sure if she was ready for people to see her like this.
Answer for me, please.
Fia ran and hid in the privy while Yuli answered the door. She heard Zhu Gong's voice.
Ah, Mistress Yuli. I assume Lady Fia is within?
Yes, in the privy.
Can you inform her that Mistress Kelji has come to visit? She needs to speak with her on what seems quite an urgent matter.
Urgent?
Fia's mind conjured up all kinds of mishaps that could be taking place in the city below.
Send her up,
Fia called out.
Thank you, Zhu Gong.
Will do, madam.
Once he had left, Fia reemerged.
What do you think it is?
Yuli shrugged.
Must be very important for her to come all the way up here.
A few moments later, a knock came at the door, and when Yuli opened it, Kelji burst inside. She was sweating profusely, like she'd just run the entire way. And knowing Kelji, she probably did, but that wasn't what struck Fia the most. In her hands were several sheets of paper that she waved in the air as she approached her aggressively.
Damn it, Fia!
She shouted.
You're freaking pregnant!
The floor fell out from under her, and she thanked the stars that Zhu Gong hadn't accompanied Kelji to her room. Yuli immediately slammed the door closed behind her, looking white as a ghost.
How did you know?
Yuli suddenly asked.
Does she look that bad in the robes? What?
Kelji said, staring oddly at Fia now.
Something seems off for sure, but no, it's not that. You don't even look pregnant.
She then shook the papers again.
But that doesn't mean you aren't. Max just wrote me and told me that you are.
Max wrote to you?
Fia asked.
Yeah. What the hell, Fia? You've been hiding this?
Shame and embarrassment flushed her face red.
It's the curveball,
Yuli spoke for her.
This was what Max was speaking of in his last letter.
Yeah, no shit, it's a curveball,
Kelji said.
This is crazy, Fia. How are you supposed to fight the Bird Sisters like this?
She sighed.
I don't know. I try not to think about it. Maybe it's time you tell everyone the truth now, Fia,
Yuli said.
Your parents, at least.
She shook her head.
Not until after the trial. I'm the only one who can represent the family. I can't give them any more stress than I already have. Plus, I just don't want to disappoint my father again.
Probably should have thought about that before,
Kelji said sardonically.
Kelji!
Yuli chided her.
What?
Fia sighed.
It's all right. I deserve it. I was thinking with my heart, not my head. But it's too late to turn back now.
What about Kelji fighting for you?
Yuli said.
I'm sure she could fare well against the sisters.
Kelji's eyes widened.
Me? Well, sure. I don't know if I could beat all three, but I'll give it a shot.
No,
Fia said, shaking her head.
I appreciate it, Kelji, but you're not the proper rank. You've just entered the iron bracket, and they are all gold. And besides that, the writ is written specifically in my name. The Bird Sisters would not agree to the settlement match without it.
Yuli frowned.
I worry for you, Fia. Can you even fight in this condition? What about the baby? I have no choice. Perhaps these mama's robes will help.
So what has Max said?
Yuli asked, reaching for the papers in Kelji's hands.
Is everything all right? Don't bother,
Kelji said, handing them to her.
It's all in English.
Really? Max can write in English still? Let me see.
As she opened one of the papers, Kelji's eyes suddenly grew wide.
No, wait! Don't look at that one!
Yuli and Fia looked at Kelji perplexed as Yuli held up a blank page.
What? There's nothing on it.
What?
Kelji said, sounding surprised.
You two don't see anything?
Fia looked again at the blank page.
See what?
Kelji then laughed.
Never mind. I must have gotten the pages mixed up.
So what is he saying?
Fia asked, as Yuli handed the odd-looking Terran script to her.
A lot of stuff about his advancement. He's hoping to do his final exam soon, and then he's off to the Hell Worlds.
Fia's heart suddenly jumped.
What? Already?
I thought the time frame was 3 years,
Yuli said. Kelji merely shrugged.
You know, Max, where there's a will, there's a way. He said no way is Fia having that baby without him being here.
Fia's throat tightened as tears filled her eyes. The heavens had answered her prayers yet again.
This is wonderful news,
Yuli shouted.
Max will be home soon to sort all this mess out. Don't go celebrating just yet,
Kelji said.
The toughest part is yet to come. But don't worry, I'll be helping him all the way.
Helping him?
Fia asked.
How?
Kelji suddenly blushed and grinned.
You know, prayers, moral support, all that.
Fia laughed.
Yes, of course. We all will.
This still doesn't solve the issue with you fighting the Bird Sisters, does it?
Yuli asked.
Max won't be home that quickly. Will he?
Kelji shook her head.
I don't know. Maybe.
A new resolve filled her as Fia once again looked at herself in the mirror. Gone were the self-deprecating thoughts and emotions. Her love had achieved the impossible for her, and she would do the same.
There is no issue,
Fia said confidently.
I beat those stupid girls when I was 12, and with these robes, I can easily do it when I'm pregnant.
You sure?
Yuli asked, looking uncertain.
I've got this,
Fia said.
The Bird Sisters won't know what hit them.
As Kelsey departed the Dong family estate, she couldn't help but reflect on what Fia had said. Although she had spoken with confidence, Kelsey had sensed the sliver of fear in Fia's heart. She was still taking a risk, but had the courage now to do what needed to be done.
She wished she could help in some way, but her own limitations were preventing her there, which meant she had to put her energies towards the next best thing, helping Max and dealing with the demon that would destroy the whole city if she let it. Kelsey stopped briefly to read the last part of Max's letter again. I can sense you when I'm out under the blood moon, so maybe that's the connection. I have a date for my final exam where I need to be under the influence for a whole night. Go under the blood moon and spirit walk within your struggler on that same date. Maybe we could find one another. If we can make this work, I'll be able to help support you to kill that demon bastard Hong Fang 2.0. Oh, and be sure to show no one that picture, okay? It will make them go insane. But you can look at it briefly to strengthen your spiritual cultivation. Kelsey had nearly forgotten about that. She glanced about to ensure no one was around and quickly opened the blank paper for another look herself. Instantly, a sense of terror and dread filled her soul as the image of the squid monster stared back at her, the creature seeming to come alive on the page. She quickly closed it again, breathing heavily. If these were the types of creatures Max would have to face on the Hell Worlds, then he had a hard road ahead indeed. She dared not tell Fia or Yuli, though. It was enough for them to know that Max was making the struggle to get back home early. But if they had any idea of the reality of his struggle, it truly would drive them insane. Kelsey took one last look at the date. It would be 3 days from now. Just enough time to shore up things in the city and then race back home to the bunker to try and connect to Max under the blood moon without that demon showing up for her and with Vanya as a safety net.
Hang in there, Max, Kelsey whispered. Your little sis is gonna come find you.
Chapter 38. I centered myself as I stood within the middle of the training grounds. It was close to noon now, and I'd been training since dawn. High above me, three targets were placed atop the pillars in the courtyard. I cycled my frenzy and with a burst of speed left into the air with lightning walk. My foot pushed off the air with a sharp snap of thunder, propelling me higher. I performed the technique again with my opposite foot as I literally climbed an invisible staircase to the targets hanging high in the air. Swinging my axe, I used lightning two-log chop to take out the first one, and then pivoting, lightning walk to the next two targets to take them out as well. I found myself hanging high in the air after the last one, and then allowed myself to fall to the ground in a somersault, hitting lightning walk at the last second to slow my descent before landing in a superhero pose. A small round of applause came from behind me as the Phalanx crew, who had admittedly been watching me perfect my technique for the last few weeks, cheered me on. But my true audience consisted of only one person. Chief Yora stepped towards me, hands clasped behind her back, a neutral expression on her face.
Quite an unorthodox style, and a bit clumsy, but you did make it into the air this time.
Does that mean I qualify for the final exam? I asked hopefully. She paused a moment. I began to fear what she would say next, but then she gave me a smile.
Just barely,
she said.
This will be enough to survive the exam tomorrow night, but on the Hell Worlds you will need to be even more proficient, and arguably you will need a faster form of travel as well. Air walking is efficient, but slow. You may need some form of quick escape that can transport you much more rapidly out of harm's way.
I grinned with struggler's resolve. Running away from a punch usually ain't my style, but I understand. I'll work on something. I'll have it perfected before my deployment. Yora chuckled.
Don't count your winnings early. You still need to pass the exam itself, which won't be easy.
I nodded. Understood.
Be sure to attend the briefing tomorrow at noon,
she said as she turned to walk away.
There will be some additional challenges to face besides just survival. You'll want to know what they are.
As Yora left, a new sense of resolve filled me. New challenges. What the hell could they be? No matter, I thought. Noon was basically 24 hours away. I'd find out then, but 24 hours gave me ample time to at least start thinking about an improvement to my lightning walk technique.
I plopped down into lotus position to ponder it some more within my own mind. The demon and struggler joined me on the secluded lakeside beach of my inner domain. Seeing them reminded me that I still hadn't achieved the real breakthrough I needed to yet, combining them somehow so that I could advance to the sacred soul realm. I took a peek at the Foundation manual again just to confirm where I was. Core formation, first tier, core formation. Second tier, core body refinement. Third tier, core mental refinement. Fourth tier, core density refinement. Fifth tier, inner soul detection. Sixth tier, inner soul focus. Seventh tier, inner soul refinement. Eighth tier, inner soul projection. Ninth tier, secondary soul germination. I definitely mastered the eighth tier now. I could project my spectral body in the real world with ease, and had even honed my fist blade axe of the struggler techniques, which allowed me to do spiritual damage on the fly without summoning my full spectral body projection. But that damn secondary soul germination still eluded me. I had increased my frenzy capacity by what had to be 100-fold by now as well, cultivating under the blood moon each night. So much so that I was fairly confident I could survive an entire night now by utilizing my soul shield technique. That put me in good stead to pass the exam. So long as I didn't burn too much extra frenzy fighting the demons, I should be okay. Which led me to my next impediment. Flying. I'd gotten some basics down, but I had to trust what Yora was saying was true as well. The basics just wouldn't cut it on the Hell Worlds. But at least she'd given me my shot at passing the exam in advance. I summoned the Airwalk manual from memory and began scanning through it. There was a more advanced technique within it that maybe I could adapt, but I wasn't sure. I found the passage for it. Windwalk. If airwalking is akin to strolling among the clouds, then windwalking is gliding upon the currents flowing between them. It requires a mastery of the airwalk technique combined with the physical agility to ride upon the wind itself. Riding the wind, I thought. That sounded like surfing or something, and the more I read, the more it appeared to literally rely upon a wind blowing as a form of movement. If there was no wind, the technique was useless. That certainly wouldn't be a reliable form of escape, not unless a hurricane was blowing. Still, it gave me some ideas. If there was no wind, perhaps I could make some of my own, or make something like it. A smile came to my lips the more I thought about it. The struggler and demon instantly agreed, reading my thoughts. "It's settled then," I said to them. "I'm going to figure out how to ride the lightning." It was a good couple of hours into my research when I hit the first roadblock. The windwalk technique was similar to airwalk in that it used the same meridians, but it was almost the same technique in inverse. Where airwalk used chi to kick off the air, windwalk used the same to stick to it. To complicate matters was how I was going to stick lightning in there to make it all work together somehow. I was beginning to fear I had bitten off way more than I could chew when something suddenly tugged me out of my meditation.
"I said congratulations,"
a voice said. I opened my eyes and was stunned to see Blue Rose standing over me, and much more stunned that she was actually talking to me. We hadn't spoken to each other in weeks, not since she blew up at me after the assembly. Part of me wanted to tell her to piss off, but the river of fear running through her soul urged the struggler to hold the demon at bay. I still wasn't sure what was going on between us. It was more her beef than mine, but she still hadn't apologized for embarrassing me either. Perhaps this was it. "Congratulations for what?" I asked.
"On learning how to fly."
I couldn't tell if she was being completely sincere or not, but she did seem a little mousy about it. "Thanks," I said. "It took a while." Blue Rose only nodded as an uncomfortable silence fell between us.
"Anyway,"
she said,
"good luck on the final exam."
She then turned and walked away, leaving me wondering if that was as good of an apology as I was going to get from her, or if that even was one. Maybe I'd have to go first. "Hey, Blue!" I called out after her, and she stopped. "No hard feelings, all right?"
"About what?"
she said. I merely shrugged. "Everything?" She nodded slowly, but didn't smile.
Sure. No hard feelings, Max.
And with that, she left the training yard. It wasn't the reaction I'd hoped for. I still didn't know if we were cool or not, but I couldn't worry about that right now. I had already made my choice to advance, and as Yor had said, it was simply luck if relationships could survive. I closed my eyes and tucked myself away again into my spiritual domain, setting my mind back to task. I had to figure this ride-the-lightning thing out. That's what was important now. Not friends. I stayed up most of the night plodding away at the new technique, as well as continuing into the morning. By that time, I thought I might have constructed the bare bones of something that could work, but I had no time to test it. Flame willing, I would have a week or so before having to deploy anyway. I tucked the Meridian sequence into the back of my mind as I joined the noonday assembly of black robes in the courtyard to prep for the final exam. Chief Yora was there along with the president, who stood overlooking us with arms folded across his massive chest. A much smaller contingent of black robes had assembled, the upperclassmen, which was only about 20 of us or so. Jay Sulong gave me a leer as he entered the square with his token tribute gang, but I paid them no mind with indifference. Then I saw someone I wasn't expecting. Blue Rose sauntered in right behind them. What the hell? Had she advanced? Before I could ponder the situation, President Su Li Zhen stepped forward to address us.
Before Chief Yora explains the details of the final exam, I wish to congratulate each and every one of you for making it this far in your progression. Many of you arrived here with only a sliver of hope for survival, and yet you have beaten the odds and persevered. By standing here today, you have accomplished more than 90% of the Empire ever will. You are beyond just cultivators. You have toughened yourselves to face the fires of the Hell Worlds, and tonight, you will face your final challenge to prepare you for that.
He then nodded to Chief Yora.
I echo the President's sentiments,
she said.
It is no small feat to achieve what you have. You are right now a magnitude stronger than when you arrived, and perhaps stronger than any peer you've faced in the outside world. But tonight, we will simulate exactly what you will face on your tour of the Hell Worlds. Caches of salt crystals have been buried in the desert, which you will mine as aetherite. You must do this throughout the night, under the effects of a full blood moon, and defend yourselves from the hordes that follow. In addition, a new component shall be added. Jesu Long, Iron Bull, please step forward.
My heart jumped for a moment as she called my name. I went to the front of the assembly and stood next to Jesu Long.
These two have qualified for the final exam in all but one aspect,
she said.
They are both required to partake in a leadership assessment. This final exam will incorporate their respective assessments in a unique way. You will be split into two teams with Jesu Long and the Iron Bull as respective captains. It will be their job to direct the teams to locate the aetherite, mine it, and return home safely. The team captain who harvests the most aetherite will be named platoon leader for the 28th deployment of the 5073rd campaign.
Jesu Long grinned next to me.
Seems I've been blessed with a rematch. I hope you prove better at this than you are at flying.
I chortled with indifference. No worse than you are at fighting.
Bastard! He hissed. You'll swallow those words.
The captains will now select their teams, Su Li Zhen said. The first pick will be decided by a coin flip.
Yin or Yang?
Yora asked as she produced a single coin.
Yang!
Jesu Long shouted.
He can be Yin. It suits him more.
He broke out into a laugh that was echoed by a few of his cronies.
I chose not to comment. Yor flipped the coin.
Yang it is. You may make the first selection, Jesu Long. See?
Jesu Long said, glancing at me sideways.
The fates favor me with victory already.
He then looked into the crowd.
Blue Rose!
My heart did another jump, which seemed to mirror the shock on Blue Rose's face. As she shuffled almost reluctantly to stand behind Jesu Long, I nearly forgot to call the name of my own pick, but it didn't really matter after that. We went through the process mechanically, but I was more concerned with what Jesu Long had up his sleeve. Why the hell you pick her? I said once we were through. The bastard merely shrugged.
Because I could. We'll see how your friend fares under my supreme command.
Son of a bitch. Chief Yor gave the order for us to disperse and prepare, and I caught Blue Rose by the elbow. Hey, what are you even doing here? Her brows lowered as she pulled her arm away.
What? Do you think you're the only one who can advance? You think I'm not at your level?
Chief Yor cleared you for this.
You want to ask her yourself?
I studied her and sensed the contempt in her heart. But I wasn't going to let that stop me. Blue, the last time you were under the Blood Moon, you nearly lost your mind. Are you sure you could spend an entire night?
That's the last time you saw me,
she said bitterly.
I've been doing a lot of stuff since then. Advancing on my own, just like you.
Guess we weren't cool, I thought. But could she actually have advanced that quickly? As quick as me? Blue, I just want to be sure you can handle.
Save the fake concern, Max,
she snapped.
If you don't believe me, I'll prove it to you. I'm good on my own.
Yeah, but you won't be on your own. You'll be with that idiot leading you. She jutted her chin in the air.
I'm actually glad Jesu Long picked me first. That'll prove I did it through my own strength and not just by following you.
My insides flared. I felt like slugging her. Still got that damn chip on your shoulder, huh? She cut her eyes at me and then turned her back without answering. I cultivated the anger in my soul just to get rid of it. I turned to see the 10 tributes on my team all looking to me expectantly. It was a reminder that I had a job to do and there was no time for a dumbass grudge to get in the way. Go back to the barracks and get some rest, I said. We'll meet up after chow to go over the game plan. Dismissed. As they departed, giving me salutes and bows, I couldn't ignore the whispered comments that came with them.
Hell's up with those two?
I should just bang and get it over with already. I hope this doesn't mess us up tonight.
Is it too late to switch teams?
I grimaced inwardly. Blue Rose's ability to inadvertently cause me to lose face was becoming legendary. I shrugged it off with indifference. I had to prove to my team that I was in control, not let this crap affect me. I looked to the sky and the stars I couldn't see, imagining the globe of the Earth floating somewhere out there. Eye on the prize, Max, I told myself. Remember what you came here for. I cycled my frenzy with the fresh resolve of my Tao. Tonight I would get my first taste of the Hell Worlds, and I had a lot more people than just Blue Rose to think about. Chapter 39. Kelsey sat on the edge of the barrier, watching and waiting. The sun was still hanging low in the sky, a few hours yet until nightfall. She reread Max's letter and mentally went through the gymnastics of calculating the exact date and time on Earth. She didn't know how the day and night cycles of Earth and the planet Max was on lined up, but hopefully there would be some overlap throughout the night where Max was supposedly going to spend it entirely under the effects of the Blood Moon. Kelsey couldn't risk such exposure herself. She had managed to get her tolerance up to just under an hour now, but that was the most she could endure, cumulatively. She decided she would take short ventures into the Blood Moon a couple of minutes at a time, and then space them out every half hour. That way she had the best chance of hopefully running into Max in the Spirit Realm. As for what would happen when they did, however, she still had no idea. In the times prior, she hadn't been actively looking for Max, and it was he who had found her. But now they both would be seeking each other. And the idea excited her.
to find a way to communicate across the stars. She prayed that Max was as excited as she was. A mixture of anxiety and apprehension seized my gut as I headed towards the flaming braziers at the barrier's edge. I'd assembled my platoon earlier and had all 10 of them in tow as we together faced our final exam. I knew them each by name, but I couldn't say I knew them well personally. Not to the extent that I would need to in order to win this challenge. I'd been plotting out a strategy all afternoon and had what I thought was a good plan. I felt like I was back at the handler station again, training a batch of new recruits. This challenge was more than just survival, and I needed to know everyone's strengths and weaknesses if I wanted to get the best performance out of my team. The majority were high-tier core realm cultivators, with a couple on the cusp of breaking through to the sacred soul realm like myself. But what really mattered was their ability to withstand the dark frenzy of the Blood Moon. "All right," I said, stopping them and pulling them into a quick formation. "Time to go over the game plan. I want to be able to rotate people in between the front lines and those who are mining, and for that, I need to know what everyone's tolerance is to the demonic chi of the Blood Moon."
"What difference will it make?" a guy named Juxui asked. "We'll all be under the same effect."
"It'll be worse when you're looking those demons straight in the face," I said. Most of these guys hadn't had the deeper insight like me, knowledge of what glimpsing the unseen could do to one's psyche. Granted, they wouldn't be facing off against those starborn demons like before, but for them, even normal demons would count. "It'll wear you down more. For frontliners, I need people with mental fortitude as well as fighting ability. So who's on my front line?" Everyone raised their hands. "All right, hands down," I said with a sigh. "Look, the bullshit stops now. There's no shame for one's abilities or lack thereof in my platoon. Everyone has a purpose. Now, which of you just barely squeaked by your last Blood Moon assessment? Be honest." Timidly, three people raised their hands. "All right, you three are my core mining team," I said. I then looked between them. "Dimwe, you'll be the team lead." Dimwe, a petite woman who I knew to be pretty smart in the lab, snapped me a salute.
"Yes, platoon commander."
"It'll be your job to mine and secure the crystals," I said. "I'll lead the frontline team for defense. Now, who is the best flyer here?" Everyone pointed to a guy named Ten Chui. He was tall and lanky, with short-cut hair and a mustache. I hadn't seen him fly, but I respected everyone else's opinion. "Ten Chui, you'll be our scout," I said. "You'll warn us of incoming demon waves, as well as seek out the next mining location."
"Understood," he said.
"All right, one last thing," I said, looking to the rest of the team. "Above all else, everyone fights to survive this night, understand? No one gets left behind, even if it costs us the win." That caused a bunch of murmurs and shocked looks. "Don't get me wrong," I said. "We're still gunning to win this, but we're all way too close to being able to do this for real to throw our lives away now."
"Yes, platoon commander!" they shouted in unison.
"Okay," I said. "Let's get to it." As we got back underway, a whistle called out to me from behind. I stopped and looked toward the bushes and was shocked to see Chu Ren and Lo Ren emerge.
"Hey," I said in a hushed whisper, glancing over my shoulder as I approached them. "What the hell are you guys doing out here?"
"We came to give you this,"
Chu Ren said, producing a bottle from his robes.
"We heard about your final exam."
"Whoa," I said. "I can't be celebrating early, guys."
Lo Ren laughed. "It's not liquor. It's a potent healing and revitalizing elixir. Figured you could use any advantage you can get out there."
I smiled, taking the bottle. "I don't know if this counts as cheating, but thanks, guys."
"Here is one for Blue Rose as well,"
Chu Ren said, handing me another.
"Blue Rose?"
Chu Ren smiled sheepishly.
"I know you two don't get on anymore, but she's become a good friend to us. We wish to see her succeed as well."
"Don't worry," I said, taking the second bottle. "I'll make sure she gets it and knows it's from the both of you." The brothers gave me a bow.
"Thank you, Master Iron Bull," Chu Ren said, "for everything. May this small token of what we can offer be only a gesture of what we owe you."
I returned the bow. "Thank you, fellas. Wish us all luck." As I turned to catch up to my platoon, I stashed both bottles in my robes. I couldn't say I was surprised that they had made one especially for Blue Rose. They all liked to drink together, after all. But it was a revelation that she had progressed and even maintained relationships outside of my own. In a way, I wondered if I was the one who had been missing out all along. Chief Yoro was waiting for us once I rejoined my platoon. Jay Sulong then arrived with his crew, and I made an effort to pick out Blue Rose from his group. I desperately wanted to give her the brother's gift, if only to just have the obligation over with, but there was no time for that now. Chief Yoro quickly took center stage to address us.
"Here are the rules for the final exam," Yoro said. "Several caches of crystals have been buried in the desert. Two are close to the barrier, and each cluster found within is worth 10 points. There are other caches of clusters further out in the desert, with crystals worth 20, 50, and 100 points each. The amount of crystals in each cache is random and become fewer with the higher value caches and more plentiful with the lower values. The crystals will be differentiated by color. Brown crystals are 10 points, black are 20, silver are 50, and gold are 100. The team with the highest total shall be deemed the winners."
I wasn't expecting a tiered point system. This changed the strategy completely.
"Obviously, the closer you mine, the closer you will be to the barrier in case you get into trouble. The gold crystals will be at a point that is roughly the distance of the new tribute run. If you venture past that point, you've gone too far. The caches are marked, but you will need to rely upon your chi sensitivity to detect them, much as you will have to do on the Hell Worlds themselves. A small quantity of aetherite has been added to each cache in this regard."
I was already recalculating what the best strategy would be now. Mine for more lower-value crystals in the safer areas, or head into the deep and get the jackpot win. Both had pros and cons.
"Crystals can only be handed in at the end of the exam,"
Yor continued.
"You must either transport them with you or stash them to be retrieved later. If you are unable to endure the exam, it is recommended you return to the safety of the barrier. You will fail your examination if you do so, but it is far better to fail and try again later than die at this stage. Keep this in mind when making your decisions of where to mine."
Chief Yoro then looked over her shoulder and out at the barren desert.
"As for now, there are no hordes, but your presence will soon attract them. The exam will commence when the first horde arrives. Are there any questions?"
A silent pause filled the air.
"Then you may cross the barrier,"
she said, taking a glance upward at the full blood moon.
"Good luck."
I walked casually into the effects of the blood moon and resisted the flare of dissonance it produced within my flame. I pushed against it with my strength of will and frenzy alone, saving my soul shield technique for when I would need to take a break. I glanced over at Jay Sulong, and the bastard leered back at me. I looked further into his ranks to see Blue Rose, and surprisingly, she didn't break her gaze when I made eye contact with her. She stared back instead, but with eyes wide and full of fear, the same thing resonating in her soul. I shot her a quizzical expression as if to say, "Are you okay?" Again, to my surprise, she nodded at me, but she looked anything but okay. Across the desert, the wail of a lone demon drifted across the air. It was quickly followed by another, and then another.
"They're coming," Chief Yoro said. "Prepare yourselves!"
It didn't take long for the howls and wails to rise to a fever pitch and the slow rumble of what sounded like thunder to roll in as the stampede approached. The horde was perhaps just minutes away, but their presence reminded me of something else. I yielded to the subtle effects of the dark frenzy to slip into a meditative state, accessing the spiritual realm to quickly inhabit my spectral body of the struggler. I still couldn't forget my other homework assignment while out all night under the blood moon. I sprinted off across the spiritual landscape, seeking Kelsey's flame. I couldn't sense anything. Perhaps she wasn't under the effects of the blood moon herself as yet. I was just about to pop back into my body when I sensed something else. Something dark. Sinister. "Izolix," I thought. "So soon?" I didn't see any tentacles yet, but I ejected myself from the spirit realm just in case. When I reopened my eyes, a tsunami of snarling demons was now approaching, less than a football field's length away and building speed. I readied my axe and glaive, surging with frenzy as I engaged steel skin in my soul shield technique. "Get ready!" I called out to my platoon.
We stand our ground and make a hole in the horde. We formed into the classic phalanx defense formation, shoulder to shoulder with weapons at the ready. I couldn't sense chi, but I could imagine the air was pulsing with it as each cultivator tapped into their various defensive chi techniques. In the darkness, the forms of the demons emerged, twisted and red-bodied, all claws, horns, and fangs. But at least they weren't starborn. Suddenly, Jesu Long let out a cry.
To the air!
He shouted and immediately took off into the night sky.
Follow me! Anyone who can't fly gets left behind! Move!
He took off in a burst of speed, flying over the heads of the charging demon horde. The majority of his team took off with him, including Blue Rose, who winked out of existence at just the last second before the stampede hit. Two poor sods who couldn't fly were left out in the open. Shit! Quick advance! I shouted. On me! I took off in a sprint to intercept as the horde closed in on the two cultivators. Fall back to us! I shouted to them. I didn't have to yell twice. They jumped into the midst of our defensive formation just as the wave of demons hit. I surged with frenzy, releasing a lightning one-chop cleave. My glaive and axe swung in unison, and a huge arc of lightning sailed outwards, cutting into the charging demons. The cultivators of my size performed similar maneuvers, using chi technique to slaughter the demons in huge swaths. Ten Chui took to the air and blasted downward with a fire technique to clear a path ahead of us. Keep pushing! I shouted with struggler's resolve, charging headfirst into the swarm. Claws and teeth raked against my hardened skin, but I bashed them aside with elbows and wide sweeps of my blades. Time folded in on itself as my bloodlust kicked in and my flame began to spew fresh frenzy. We're making headway, Ten Chui called from above. I could see the wave coming to an end. How many left? I cried. 1,000, maybe. 100 to 1, I thought. The sheer numbers put the odds against us. My flame surged a second time, and I directed the frenzy that came with it straight towards my Ying as I engaged Lightning Walk to get above the horde and jump straight into their midst. Wrath of 1,000 slain souls! I landed like I was performing a cannonball dive into a pool, my technique going off with a massive splash of frenzied lightning. The technique spread 50 feet all around, and when I looked about, the entire area was covered in smoldering demon corpses. A rush of lemonade came from behind as my platoon stared at me, stupefied. It was probably the first time they'd ever seen me truly cut loose. I cultivated it to fuel my next lightning arc strike as I pushed into the rest of the horde. I kept an eye on my frenzy reserves as time wore on. I had plenty in the tank thanks to how much I was producing, but my soul shield was constantly engaged as well. I'd have to manage it carefully to survive the entire night. I led the charge as I hacked and cleaved my way into a bloodlust-filled fervor. A solid 10 minutes went by with nothing but carnage and rage. When some semblance of peace returned, the entire horde lay decimated at our feet. A couple of my platoon members fell to their knees in exhaustion, struggling to catch their breath. Ten Chui touched down next to me.
I'm not certain who the real demon is, he said to me. You? Or them?
I cracked a smile as I cultivated the compliment.
You got no idea, my friend.
I checked on my team, and thankfully no one was badly injured, including the two tributes from Jesu Long's group.
What are we going to do with them now?
Someone asked.
I shrugged and looked at the both of them. Well, I guess you're either under my command now, or you can both cross the barrier and fail. Which is it?
They looked at one another and then bowed before me.
They humbly request to join your platoon, Iron Bull, one of them said. Please accept us.
Fall in under Dimwei, I said. You can join the mining crew.
I looked out at the sea of bodies and tried to get my bearings. We'd traversed a good 1,000 yards or so from the barrier, the lights of the braziers just barely visible now.
What now, Commander? Chuck Sui asked. Jesu Long and his platoon are probably deep into the desert by now, mining the high-value crystals.
We should do the same, one of my tributes said.
We should get out to them!
No, I said with struggler's resolve. This is a marathon, not a sprint. We need to spend all night out here regardless of how much we mine. Jesu Long is going to burn them all out flying like that.
And this won't, Juk Sui said. That battle was brutal.
He had a point, but I needed to shut down any dissension fast. The last thing I needed was for morale to slip. Winning wasn't the main objective anyway. Do you think they will be any easier on the Hell Worlds? I shot back. This isn't some dumbass competition to be won. It's preparation for what we're going to have to deal with for real. If you want to cut corners for a cheap win, then you can march your ass back to the barrier right now. I then shouted to the rest of the platoon. That goes for everyone! You want an easy ride? Let me know now! I waited, and a mixture of beer and lemonade filled their hearts. Good, I said. Now let's get to mining. Since we made the effort to clear the first wave, we might as well grab what's here. I turned to Dimwe. Get on it. Once you find the cache, we'll all kick in to clear it quickly.
Yes, sir!
She snapped me a salute and then ventured off with her mining team. Tenchui, you go scout our next position. On it, he said. As Tenchui took to the air, I looked to the rest of my team. Everyone else take a breather while you can, I said. This is going to be a long night. Chapter 40 Kelsey waded through the sea of demons, cutting them down with swift chops of her axe. Her flame was a frenzied brewing furnace triggered by the root of her Tao. Demon after demon she killed, each one adding to her bloodlust. It wasn't her objective to merely wait out the demon horde as she normally did when she cultivated. Tonight, she was trying to thin it completely. To cut it down so she could have a moment of pause in order to enter the spirit realm.
Come on! Come on!
She yelled impatiently, subtly gauging the time.
Hurry up and die already!
She wished she had mastered the more powerful frenzied lightning techniques like Wrath of a Thousand Slain Souls, but she had to settle for killing only one or two at a time. It cost her precious seconds, but eventually she caused enough collateral damage for the demons to flee when she whittled them down to just a handful.
All right, no time to lose, she thought.
Closing her eyes, Kelsey quickly jumped into the spiritual realm. She took on the blue-hued form of the Struggler and began racing through the darkness.
Max!
She called out.
Max!
She didn't even know if sound worked in spiritual space, or if it worked like normal anyway. She decided to take a different approach and quieted herself instead. Closing her spiritual eyes, she listened and sensed instead of just charging forward randomly. She wasn't sure how much time had passed, but eventually she sensed what she'd been looking for, the essence of another flame. She focused on it a second longer, determining a direction, and when she reopened her spiritual eyes, she could just barely see a faint golden glow in the distance.
There you are!
With newfound excitement, Kelsey took off into the spiritual darkness, seeking her big brother. I spun with a lightning one-chop cleave, cutting into the huge abdomen of the giant insect-like creature blocking my path. It was a frenzy mutated Takarid, as far as I could tell, twice as big as a normal one and three times as mean. I pressed on with my men beside me, pushing back against the swarm. What had to be half an hour of straight killing went by as we charged into the hundreds of creatures, insect awful and blood mixing with claws, swords, and fangs. By the time there was room for a breather, everyone in the platoon was exhausted and panting like dogs. I stumbled atop the small outcropping we were upon and could see another wave of them already on the way.
These things don't stop coming, do they?
Chuck Sui said.
What a cursed night.
He wasn't wrong, but I had a feeling this was still easy mode compared to what lay ahead. Dimwe, I called. Get to mining while you can. We'll prepare to defend against the next assault. The five tributes and her small team began tackling an area right behind the outcropping with shovels and chi blasts. In less than a minute, they had struck pay dirt and began extracting silver crystals worth 50 points each.
Looks like five of them were here, Commander,
Dimwe reported. What's the total now? I asked. She spent a few moments to check the large black duffel bags they were hauling the tennis ball-sized crystals within.
1,870 points to my count.
I concur,
one of her team, who was counting with her, said. I looked for Tenchui. How far is the next location?
Mile and a half east, he said. Hoping it's a gold one. I spotted the other platoon near there, too, so if we want it, we'll need to hurry.
I looked back to the swarm of Takrids bearing down on us, a group at least 300 strong. Fighting through them would cost us more time.
All right, I said.
We're leapfrogging over this next wave, but watch your backs after we do. We'll need to get to the next location and be ready to defend against them if they turn around.
I'd be ready to fight the next wave ahead of us as well, Juxui reminded.
Yes, I said, and possibly at the same time. No rest for the wicked, I thought. I cycled my frenzy reserves just over halfway depleted now. I would survive the night if I played it conservatively, but I needed to fly to gain some speed right now. I took the lead, powering across the desert and heading straight for the swarm of demonic Takrids charging towards us. I got within 30 feet and executed lightning walk as I stepped into the air. It was a surreal feeling to perform the maneuver in combat, sailing right over the tops of my enemies like I was walking on a separate plane of existence. My platoon came with me, most of them taking to the air easily, while the two tributes we inherited from Jesu Long's team performed a rather slow levitating maneuver, like they were being lifted by a hot air balloon or something. I was surprised there was someone as bad as me at flying, but they got the job done and cleared the swarm. I pressed on for a couple hundred more yards, sprinting through the sky at a speed I'd never experienced before. It was the first time I'd gone all out with the technique, and the ability to glide over the terrain at 3 times the speed as normal was addicting. But I was still relatively slow compared to everyone else, especially Ten Chui, who was flying backwards and waiting for the rest of us to catch up. He landed after a minute more of flying, right on the edge of a cliff face that towered some 300 feet into the air. "It's here," he said. "Start digging." I touched down clumsily, tripping in the sand and saving myself with a roll. Dim Wei and her team immediately got at it while I formed the rest of the platoon into a perimeter. We at least had the cliff to our backs now, which meant that was one side we didn't have to worry about defending against. It didn't look like the Takrid swarm we flew over was smart enough to turn around either. Scanning the dark horizon, now lit with the subtle red hue of the full blood moon, I couldn't see anything stampeding towards us. That meant a rare opportunity for a break. "Defense team!" I shouted. "Rest and recover! Juxui, give Ten Chui a break and stand aerial lookout. 10 minutes! I didn't have to give the order twice. Immediately, the team collapsed onto their haunches and began chugging down water and snacking on small bits of food we had brought. I felt for the 2 bottles of elixir in my robes and considered taking a swig of one, but I didn't feel that spent as yet. Blue Rose, though, I didn't know. I wished I had had the chance to give it to her. That worried look she had given me before the exam started was still etched in my mind. I stuck my axe and glaive in the sand and sat down for a break myself. After chugging down some water and tearing through some jerky, I disengaged my soul shield technique to give my Danti and Unfrenzy reserves a break as well. I compensated instead by cycling my frenzy and allowing the strength of my spiritual pressure alone to fight against the dark aura of the Blood Moon. It reminded me that my entire team was doing the same thing constantly. They didn't have the advantage of a soul shield technique like me, although granted the effects of the Blood Moon on them was probably a tenth of what I experienced as a berserker. As the effects of the Blood Moon increased, the edges of my vision began to slip into the darkness of the spiritual realm. It was something I'd gotten used to after all these weeks of cultivating. I knew just how long I could push it before I started to wig out and turn into a demon, or before Izolix might come snooping around to find my location again. About a minute went by when I began to sense something else. Frenzy. But not my own. Kelsey! I dove deeper into the spiritual realm, taking on the persona of the blue-hued struggler. As I took on my spectral form, I could sense the faint presence of dark frenzy permeating the spiritual air. The effects of the Blood Moon itself. I cycled my frenzy to focus on what I'd sensed earlier, and then like a ghost emerging from the darkness, the faint outline of Kelsey's flame appeared. "Kelsey!" I shouted as I stepped towards her, tapping into her flame. "Kelsey, can you hear me?" The glowing blue image before me flared a little, and I could sense her excitement and relief. "We did it," I thought. "We connected across the stars under the influence of the Blood Moon." But it wasn't like direct communication, it seemed. Or complex communication was perhaps a better way to describe it. I could sense her emotions, perhaps. Sentiments. Joy at finding me. Some anxiety about being out in the open while she connected to me in the spiritual realm. Curiosity about what the hell I was doing. I chuckled internally. Her personality came through loud and clear. "Yeah, I'm out in the open too, Kelsey," I said to her flame. "Fighting off endless hordes of demons. You'd be loving it out here." I waited a moment, and her flame pulsed. I wasn't certain how much I expressed across the void, but I got a sense of jealousy from her. I laughed. This was freaking wild. We were actually communicating, in real time. I went back and forth with her, trying to perfect the crude form of communication. I spoke aloud into the spiritual void and imagined Kelsey doing the same in return on her end. But what came back were only vague senses of emotions and feelings. It was almost like we were both playing a game of charades with each other, communicating by gestures alone. Still, I was beginning to make sense of things. She was concerned about something. Fear. But I wasn't sure quite about what. I tried to ask her, but I don't think it was getting across. Suddenly, I sensed alarm from her. Fear and panic. What the hell? It was then that I noticed an eyeball-ridden tentacle whip past me. Shit! I immediately ejected myself from the spiritual realm, hoping Izolix hadn't sensed me. I'd lost track of time, staying well past my safe limit. I opened my real eyes to find my platoon already on their feet. A commotion was brewing with people yelling and shouting. When I got to my feet, I saw something that caused my mind to spin. A couple hundred yards away was an enormous creature that looked straight out of the prehistoric era. It had the body of a tortoise that was nearly 5 stories high, and its shell was covered with spikes. Where its head would be was an elongated neck that ended in a massive head that resembled a cobra. I recognized it immediately. The creature I was hunting for when the Jolup decided to attack instead. A pythor. It made sense why it was here, burrowed under a cliff. But that wasn't all. Scattering before it was the disorganized remnants of Jesu Long's platoon. 2 cultivators were in the air, hammering it with chi techniques, which seemed to do nothing as they bounced off its shell. At its feet, I could see 4 more, and at least 1 tribute who now lay dead. My heart jumped. Blue Rose. I prayed it wasn't her. Everything seemed to be playing out in disorganized chaos. Half the team wasn't even with those fighting the pythor. Jesu Long was a further distance away, yelling at 3 other tributes who were digging in the sand. The whole scenario became clear when they extracted several golden crystals from the sand, and then Jesu Long gave the order to retreat. The tributes in the air were clearly only distracting the monster. As soon as Jesu Long gave the order, they withdrew, leaving the 4 tributes on the ground open to its wrath. The monster lashed its head downward, striking at one of the cultivators. I couldn't tell who it was, but they barely managed to defend against the attack, but was knocked back a good 30 feet or more by the force of the hit. Then, with the sound of a roaring furnace, jets of bluish flames erupted from the creature's mouth. One of the tributes on the ground formed a shield against it, the flames deflecting to the sides and turning the sand to glass. The gigantic creature then lurched forward, hundreds of tons moving with a speed that seemed impossible. It crashed into the sand, landing on top of the tribute generating the shield, killing him instantly. The other 3 scattered and ran in seemingly random directions. My stomach lurched at the sight. What the hell was going on? I looked for where Jesu Long was, but the bastard was already in full retreat with the rest of his men, the black duffel bags containing the crystals in tow. My flame stirred. That son of a bitch. Dimway, stay with the crystals. The rest of us, let's go, I cried. We're rescuing those tributes. But they're on the other team, Juxui began. But 1 glare from me would fear the flame, and he shut the hell up. I kicked off the sand with lightning walk, accelerating through the air to get to the monster. The closer I got, the bigger it loomed. I didn't even check to see if my men were following me. I couldn't really care. All I wanted to know was if Blue Rose was among those still alive. I armored myself with steel skin and steel lightning as I blasted through one of the creature's fiery roars. My ablative technique protected me, but even through it I could feel the heat and power of its strength. Under the effect of the full blood moon, the beast had to be well above S-class ranking, double or even triple perhaps. When the flames cleared, I finally got sight of the tributes up close. My heart soared when I finally saw Blue Rose, but then immediately sank when I saw what she was doing. She had her hands atop her head and was laughing with tears in her eyes. I looked to the other tributes, and they were all in a similar state of semi-psychosis. Shit! It was no wonder they hadn't fled like the others, but Jesu Long had done nothing to try and save any of them either. Anger poured into my soul as I looked back at the towering monster. There was no way they could run in that state. And this thing was about to cook them alive.
Focus on its head! I shouted to my platoon as I took to the air with lightning walk. I vaulted up the 5 stories with quick lunging steps, like climbing a set of giant stairs. It took most of my focus to do so, but I had enough wherewithal to kick off the air and jump to the side just as the monster took a strike at me. The massive cobra-like head bit nothing but air, and up close, I could see its jaws dwarfed that of even the jollop. Flames and beams of chi came from above and struck the monster on the side of its scaly hood. I looked to see Ten Chui and 2 other tributes hammering away at it from afar. Below, the rest of my team had joined in the fray, attacking the creature along its snake-like neck. I kicked off the air again with a spinning slash, striking it full force with my axing glaive. I was rewarded with a deep splash of crimson as I cut through one of its fangs. As I retreated with another kick to the air, several more of my platoon members joined in, attacking his head and using their more elegant flight techniques to stay aloft while they slashed away. I sensed anger building within the creature, and then, with an explosion, it breathed flame right into us. I went flying back involuntarily, enduring the intense heat as I lost my aerial footing and went crashing to the ground. The wind was knocked out of me, and as I struggled to get back up, I saw a whole new threat bearing down on us. The Tacrid swarm from earlier had returned and was now about to hem us in between the pythor and the cliff face. I looked for Blue Rose and saw her kneeling on the ground still screaming and laughing. I didn't know where the other 2 tributes had gone. And then I saw them, both of them running straight towards the mass of giant insects. At first, I thought they were attempting to repel the horde, but they both stepped and opened their arms wide as if inviting the creatures to devour them. The reality of what happened next was hard to bear. They were snapped up like twigs, torn apart, their screams a mixture between laughter and terror. I looked at Blue Rose and feared the same would soon happen to her. No, I thought, I wouldn't allow it. I ran to her, withdrawing one of the elixirs from my robes. I didn't know if it would work to preserve her psyche or not, but it was all I had left to try. I grabbed her about the head and forced the neck of the bottle into her mouth. She fought against me, but I pinched her nose to force her to swallow. She gasped and spluttered as she downed it all, and then she stared at me with a maniacal look in her eyes and began laughing again. Damn it! I looked back to see the team still chopping away at the pythor, its head a bloodied mess now, but they looked to be getting the better of it. I turned to the approaching swarm of Tacrids. I needed backup. Mining team! I called. On me! No response. Dimway! I looked about and spotted her still back at where I had told her to stay, but the rest of her team was still with her, and they weren't alone. Fighting them was another group of tributes who were attempting to pull the duffel bag from her grasp. I couldn't believe what I was seeing. Jesu Long! That damn bastard! I didn't even have time to process my anger. The 300 or so Tacrids were about to slam right into me, and I was the only thing left standing between them and Blue Rose. I cycled my frenzy, pulling out all the stops as I engaged Mark of the Giant. With a primal yell, I surged into the wall of insects, spinning with the wrath of 1,000 slain souls. My lightning technique went off with a thunderous boom, and 12 demonic Tacrids exploded into a fine mist of shell and guts. I let go of the handbrake and spent as much frenzy as my meridians would dare, channeling technique after technique with abandon. My rapid explosions of lightning went off like a string of firecrackers, taking out the Tacrids whole groups at a time. I endured the cut of their razor-sharp claws through my steel skin and pressed on through the blood and pain, not stopping until I killed them all. Saving Blue Rose was all that mattered to me now. I felt the strength of my flame increase as the revelation of the single-minded goal solidified within my Tao. To hell with all the misunderstandings and grudges, with the endless competitions and keeping score. This was about life and death now, and no way was I going to let my friend be killed. I channeled my frenzy with a supercharged blast of my Jing, releasing a thunderstorm of lightning 50 yards wide. In an instant, 100 Tacrids exploded, sending their body parts raining from the sky. I collapsed to my knees, my Dantian down to under 25 now. But I'd done it. They were all dead. Get up, I told myself. Not done yet. I staggered back to my feet, dragging my weapons to face the pythor. I was just about to launch myself into the sky with Lightning Walk when I saw Juk Sui perform a brilliant crescent blade technique midway in the air. A huge flash of chi traced his sword strike at a giant arc that cut straight through the creature's massive neck. Time froze for a second before a huge fountain of blood sprayed and the monster's giant head and neck collapsed to the ground like a tower of falling bricks. Cheers of victory went up from my platoon, and inwardly I cheered with them. But my soul was too troubled to be relieved in full. With trepidation, I looked about for Blue Rose and found her curled up in a ball and sitting on the sand. "Please be okay," I thought as I lowered myself to her. "Blue," I said, "speak to me. Are you all right?" Fearful seconds passed as her head remained buried between her knees, and then slowly she raised her face to mine. Tears were in her eyes, but she wasn't laughing anymore.
I lied, Max,"
she said. "Blue!" Perhaps it was the elixir or the pythor being killed, but she seemed okay again. "Thank God you're all right."
"No," she shouted. "I'm not all right. I lied, Max. I lied."
What was she talking about? Lied about what? She shook her head.
"I'm not ready. I wasn't ready. I lied, Max, on the assessment. I cheated."
"What?"
"I blinked in and out of the barrier to keep from being overexposed. I knew I couldn't last more than 3 hours out here."
My eyes widened. "Why the hell did you do something like that? This is not a game to be
"Because I wanted to be with you, okay?"
she shouted and then burst into a sob.
"I didn't want you to leave me behind. I didn't want to face those hell worlds alone. Without you."
My heart melted a little. "You damn idiot," I said, and then pulled her into an embrace. "You'll be strong enough when you're ready. And if I need to come back to do a second tour with you, I will." She looked up at me as a huge surge of adoration and lemonade filled her soul.
"You really mean that?"
"Commander!" The shout had come from Ten Chui, who was still flying in the air. "What is it?" I shouted back. "Another horde? I don't know what it is. He suddenly cried out and fell from the sky. I didn't understand what had happened to him, but then I felt it for myself. Dark frenzy. The truly potent kind. From the severed neck of the pythor, bone and sinew began to snap. I quickly shut my eyes for a peek into the spiritual realm, and sure enough the source of what was happening was clear. There, somewhere in the distance, the purple hue of a demonic gate was spewing dark frenzy into the spiritual realm. Damn it, I thought. So it had found me. When I opened my eyes, I instantly spotted the gate in the physical world for myself. It was fixed in midair, about where Ten Chui had been hovering. It was small, only man-sized, but the strength of the dark frenzy pouring out of it was immense. There was no mistake what was coming through it. It wasn't an army Izolix was sending this time. The gate was small, but still large enough to send its own will. A will that would soon inhabit the body of the pythor and turn the already triple S-ranked monster into something even more. Blue Rose began to scream, as did several other tributes. The gate was sending them into the realm of the unseen, and the monstrosity the pythor corpse would soon become would be no exception.
"I'm losing it again,"
Blue Rose cried.
"I'm losing my mind! Max! Max, help me!"
Panic surged as my heart raced. I had to get her back to the barrier, to the healing warmth of the aetherite crystal. But she wouldn't be able to survive the next few minutes, much less the trip back to Dugok Bong that was nearly 20 miles away. I looked to my platoon, who were slowly falling apart under the direct effects of the Herald of the Stars. They wouldn't survive much longer either. My mind reeled as an impossible decision fell before me. I could stay and fight, but lose Blue Rose in the process. Or I could try to save her instead, and leave my men. Men who had entrusted their lives to me and the decisions I would make. But I couldn't just run and leave this gate open either. If Izolix discovered what it was we were doing here, our fight against the cursed stars would be over. I wanted to save everyone, but how the hell could I? It was either her or them, I realized. Shit, I thought. How the hell do I choose?
Chapter 41. Kelsey re-entered the spiritual realm and immediately began looking for Max's flame. She had to retreat to the safety of Vanya's barrier for the 10th time already. The last interaction she'd had with Max was hours ago now, and she wasn't able to detect his flame since. They'd been interrupted by the sudden appearance of Izolix as well as some pesky demons in the real world on her side. She still wasn't sure what it meant for Max to completely disappear like this. Had he gone back within the barrier on his world? Or maybe she'd only caught him at the tail end of the night. There was no way to be sure until they shared letters weeks from now. It dawned on her then that for all their superiority when it came to strength and even technology like space travel, the Yi Cultivation Empire was still in the Stone Ages when it came to communications. She wondered for a moment if that was by design. Jim had always said whoever controlled the flow of information in a conflict held an advantage, and speed of communication had to be a factor. In the old world, they'd been able to communicate instantaneously across the globe. Granted, it didn't do much for the Earth when the cultivators came. Still, it made her wonder.
What am I even thinking about?
Kelsey said. All this stuff was Max's Tao, not her own. She only cared about killing demons. But it intrigued her to ponder just how Yi society worked outside of their planet. She envied Max again for his opportunity to experience the true outside world, a world she too hoped to venture to and explore one day. She was just about to call it quits for another half hour when she sensed Max's flame reappear. Excitement filled her as she rushed towards it, but when she finally touched her disembodied flame to make contact with his, an equal amount of concern filled her soul. Max was in trouble. Izolix. And he was fearing for someone else's life that she didn't know. But most of all, she sensed something she rarely did within Max. Uncertainty. Blue Rose was growing worse by the second. I held her in my arms, and the laughing fit started again. As her sanity ping-ponged back and forth between madness and clarity, she looked at me with tear-soaked eyes and struggled to get words out in between.
I'm sorry, Max,
she blurted in between laughs.
For what I did. You've been the best friend to me.
Blue, just hang on, I shouted at her, but I could sense her soul dying inside, twisting with the dark frenzy and becoming something else. No, no, no. The same would happen to my men if they stayed here as well. The dark frenzy was just too strong. Even I was starting to suffer. As I took another peek into the spiritual realm, I could see dark tentacles flowing from the spectral form of the gate now hanging in the air. There was too much happening. She wouldn't survive this, I realized grimly. Blue Rose was simply too far gone. My heart broke as I came to the realization. I couldn't save her. But I could still try to save everyone else. Full retreat! I shouted. Take to the air! You won't survive what's about to happen here! It would seem a cowardly call, especially considering everything we had faced up until now, but these guys were not ready for this. I looked back at the Pythor corpse, its body still popping and convulsing. I didn't know how long it would take to fully transform and become Izolix's new husk, but once it did, everyone here would be driven mad. Head for the barrier! I shouted. You all need to be cleansed! My platoon hesitated at my command, some of them still mesmerized by the pulsing corpse of the Pythor, while others were questioning the order itself. It didn't matter. They all needed to clear the area so I could face this beast alone. Commander, Tenchui said as he landed next to me. A new thought sparked. Tenchui was fast. Take her, I said, pushing Blue Rose towards him. Get her back to the barrier as fast as you can. Don't stop for anything. Here was a slim chance. It would take hours to get back to the barrier. She might not even make it, but I had to try to save her at least. Tenchui stared back at me perplexed as Blue Rose began to struggle in his arms. I can't move as fast carrying her, especially with her fighting like this.
No!
Blue Rose suddenly shouted, pushing Tenchui away.
I stay with Max!
She was in a moment of clarity again. Rose, you can't, I said. You'll die. You'll lose your mind.
Don't care!
She gritted her teeth, struggling to maintain control between the laughing fits.
Won't make it anyway. rather stay! Die here with you!
My soul broke a second time. She'd come to the same realization herself. Blue Rose then burst into a maniacal laugh, rolling on the ground. Blue! I shouted. Blue! But she didn't respond and just kept on laughing and crying. I knew all hope was lost then. Get going, Tenshui, I said with struggler's resolve. Get everyone out of here! He paused a second before nodding to me. He then turned about and began barking orders. The Iron Bull has granted me command as platoon leader, he shouted. The order is retreat. Move quickly, back to the barrier. Now! Now! People paused, unsure. You heard him, I shouted. He has command now. Go! The platoon reacted with soldierly efficiency, taking to the air and heading back toward the academy. I looked at Dim Wei and her team, who looked to have won the battle against Jay Su Long. Or perhaps more likely, Jay and his boys had turned tail and run as soon as they saw the corpse begin to mutate. Leave the bag! I shouted to her as she struggled to carry the crystals while trying to fly. Save yourself! Go! That's in order! Reluctantly, she dropped the bag and took to the air with a burst of chi. I watched them all depart as Blue Rose's laughter and tears grew worse. The dark frenzy was permeating the air rapidly now. As the edges of my vision began to tunnel, I looked back into the spiritual realm. The tentacles were growing longer. I had no idea if I could even fight this thing. My Dantian was down to under a quarter now. I probably didn't have enough frenzy to make it back to the academy myself without becoming a damned demon. Shit, I thought. Could this be game over for me, too? I'd burned too much frenzy.